Hey guys, what's up? It is week 315. It's going to be a rather short one, so let's just hop right into it. The first one up is LA Wars from MVD Rewind. Now, this was originally, I believe, a Vinegar Syndrome archive, so if you missed out on that, those were limited releases. Now you can pick up LA Wars. And what year was this made? This is definitely like a late 80s, like early 90s kind of style action film, if you guys know the style. And right away when this put in, I was like, what is this, a PM movie? If you guys don't know PM Entertainment, they released stuff like Hologram Man, T-Force. They're really over-the-top, low-budget action movies, but they never really skimped out on explosions and shootouts and squibs. They were a lot of fun. They were directly made for the video market, so the video stores were always riddled with these PM releases. So this director, Tony, I believe is the director. Yeah, this guy worked for PM. And as kind of behind the scenes, he made some movies there, I believe. So he wanted to make his own film, as the special features dictate. So he went out and kind of made this script, this wild script. And there's an interview with him in there where he's talking about it. Well, he made this wild feature, wanted this wild movie to get made. And he's talking about, you know, when you're a producer, you know, you kind of have to answer for if it doesn't make money and all these kind of things too. So he's definitely playing the entertainment and the kind of action stuff, all that kind of deal. So it's a kind of a run of the mill storyline here. More of a, what, for a fistful of dollars kind of story, last man standing, but not necessarily pitting the two gangs against each other. But we have a former cop. Now he's a bouncer. So they got a little bit of Roadhouse in there. You know what I mean? Roadhouse was very popular in the late 80s. So there's some Roadhouse style shit going on in there. He's a bouncer now. And, he used to be a cop because he was an excessive force, you know. He just can't let this. It is hilarious when you find out his backstory. He basically goes on and he's like, well, I'm not going to let 12-year-olds get abused. It took him out. That kind of deal. You know what I mean? Sympathetic, you know, hero cop from the time, which these characters really don't exist anymore, right? So what happens is he is kind of going about his business, and he stops this hit on this would-be wife or daughter of this kind of crime boss, this Italian crime boss. He kills a couple of these drug cartel guys who are coming in trying to take over the territory. And then the chief of police, who knows him, kind of wants him to infiltrate this Italian gang and kind of rat and roll over everybody, tell everybody what's going on. But of course, he gets involved with the Italian's daughter, and they have like a fling. Meanwhile, the main enforcer, who is like the poor man's like Joe Pesci kind of style deal going on here, is out to get him while the father starts to kind of warm up to him. So that's kind of what's going on here. The other side of the gang is, I want to say it's a Mexican gang, but it could easily be Cubans. I'm not 100% sure, you know, just the geographical location of this one. I believe it is an LA movie, or is it a Florida one? But So I'm just saying, you know, they have this big war. But the movie is so ridiculous in the fact that they do establish a couple goons, of course, Vinny from the Italian side, and a couple of the other kind of other gang members. There's like a badass female and this other tough guy who gets the better of our hero at one point. But there's a lot of this going on where there's these gang hits, and you'll just cut to these random characters. You have no idea who they are, and they'll just violently get shot or violently murdered. There's these violent hits. Somebody gets their throat slit in a car. So you're like, this movie is just nonsense. Stop ridiculous action and people getting shot and exploded and all that kind of stuff. So I'm in it for that. I mean, it's entertaining, it's nonsense. Now the acting, it ranges here. It's a little over the top, but it comes across as like, I don't purposely like to laugh at movies, but like I like the kind of sometimes over the top acting if it has like some genuine at least attempts at being a good acting in there. And there are, I mean, the people are screaming and yelling, and the Italian guy's a lot of fun. The Italian crime boss, I think his performance was solid. The hero, you know, he's not great. He comes from the line of like a Jean-Claude Van Damme, when they had the success with Jean-Claude Van Damme after like Black Eagle and whatnot. They like had this whole big thing where they were like trying to find the next Jean-Claude Van Damme. I know that Eric Carson had a bunch of, I think he was actually Eric Carson, had a bunch of movies with trying to find like Oliver, what was his name, Grunner from Nemesis and all that kind of stuff. So like, I feel like every action star that was doing martial arts was trying to be like a Jean-Claude Van Damme replacement or the next Jean-Claude Van Damme. And LA Wars is kind of no different. This guy's demeanor is not Van Damme. He's kind of like this tough Italian guy who's a big bodybuilder kind of style guy. But you see him right on there. Vince Murdocco. I know he did a couple more movies, but he was fun. He's entertaining. As far as the special features are concerned, we have the stereo and mono track. Now, the stereo sounds pretty good in the surround sound. The mono is a little light, but you know how that goes with your surround sound, your setup. It all depends. There's also French and Italian. We have subtitles. Then we have new commentary with producer, co-writer, and co-director Tony Cadaw, moderated by Stereo Midnight host Heath Holland. That's pretty cool. Starting a war, 17 minutes here. Conversation with LA Wars producer, co-writer, and director Tony Cadaw. Shoot first, interview with LA Wars cinematographer Mark Morris, and he talks a little bit about the actors in the movie and getting along with them. Yeah, this is a fun one, and it's entertaining. This is definitely a movie that you would rent or see on television, like HBO, you know, a couple of those or something like that. It's entertaining. You know, it's LA Wars, and they're not lying. I asked if it was in Florida geographically. I'm such a fucking jackass. Think about that. I was like, I don't know where it is geographically in LA or in Florida. Bro, it's called LA Wars. That's it. That's like the dumbest thing I've said in a long time that I've caught. So anyways, check it out. Sounds like it's up your alley. Okay, the next up is from Severn Films, and this is Alien from the Abyss, aka Alien from the Deep, which I believe was put out by Amina Communications Disc, Maya Communications. I had the old DVD, never watched it, and it's directed by Antonio Margheriti, who did tons of movies, and there's actually a documentary on here, an hour-long documentary about the man, which is welcomed, because Antonio Margheriti is one of these guys that's super prolific, way ahead of his time when it comes to Italian horror films. He doesn't get the recognition he really deserves if you think about the stuff he put in. He went from the early space sci-fi movies all the way to the gothic horror. He even had a couple really great ones in there, according to me. I mean, he had, you know, the gothic stuff's all good, but my personal favorite, of course, is Cannibal Apocalypse from 1980 with John Saxon, Giovanni Lamberto Ridici, RIP, and Tony King, which is a wonderful kind of crazy 80s grindhouse splatter Vietnam zombie kind of deal. Love it. One of my all-time favorite movies. But he also did Killer Fish. He did all sorts of different genres. He was kind of a journeyman, but he always put good work in. So, Alien from the Abyss. And now, this is not Antonio Margheriti's best film. Of course it's not. I mean, he has those gothic ones and Cannibal Apocalypse, but it is a really entertaining one. And you got to remember, this is 89. It's coming towards, you know, it's no longer the heyday of Italian cinema, horror sci-fi cinema. It's kind of starting to wind down. You know, we still have Bruno Mattei making tons of movies like Robo War and Shocking Dark. So, like, it does have the Shocking Dark Robo War flair. I'm not going to lie to you. But it also, this one has a couple names in there you'll recognize as Charles Napier from, you know, the Russ Meyer movies, Silence of the Lambs. He's got a great face, a chiseled kind of stone face, and he's born to play a authority figure, either a cop or some sort of military figure. This one, I believe he plays a colonel. And it also has Luciano Pigazzi in here, who's in almost all Antonio Margheriti's movies. He's in a bunch of his war movies, including, you know, what's the one? The Last Tornado, I believe he's in that one. But he's in a lot. He's in The Last Hunter, I believe. But Luciano Pigazzi goes all the way back to, like, the Mario Bava, Blood and Black Lace movies, Werewolf in a Girl's Dormitorium. He's in everything. Literally, he's in, or I think that's what that one's called, but he's in tons of Italian movies. They call him the Italian Peter Lorre. He's great. And he actually has one of the most wonderful lines in the movie. Charles, so the plot of this is basically there's this military base on this island that's very secluded, and they've been dumping nuclear waste in a volcano to get rid of it, and it's radioactive. Who the fuck knows? Okay, so there's some environmentalists and journalists that want to get in there and stop it, right? Some of the people that inhabited the island are against it, and these journalists are trying to sneak in. And of course, you know, they're not wanted there. So they're chasing the journalists and whatnot and chasing the locals to try to stop them. Charles Napier is in office screaming and yelling at that main control boards. Get them, son of a bitch. He's great in it. He's really funny. He's just born to play the role. All his dialogue is great. He's chewing everybody alive. Everybody that has to act with him is getting chewed alive. Besides Luciano Pigazzi, who plays this scientist, and he's got a beard and he looks disheveled as shit. And the most hilarious line in the movie, I absolutely loved it, because Charles Napier's like, get out of here, you've been drinking. And he's like, you're damn right I have, even though he's clearly not speaking English like Charles Napier is. And it's actually Napier's voice too, but he's like, you're damn right I have. And that never happens in a movie, right? Like, you people are like, you son of a bitch, but I just could not stop laughing. He's like, you're still dumping nuclear waste in the volcano. No, radioactivity. So what happens is we're like 45-50 minutes into this movie, and then we realize there's an alien from the abyss coming. But I know he's coming from the water, but he technically came from space, so he's coming to this island too because the radioactivity attracts him. Think of some of the other Godzilla movies where, you know, Godzilla is attracted to radioactivity or nuclear energy to kind of like fuel him. I guess that's what they're doing here. So this big alien crashes in here, starts ripping shit apart. The whole factory's falling apart. Guys are running left and right trying to kill it. And if the alien touches you, you kind of somewhat melt or goo or just whatever. You got to decontaminate. There's a hilarious scene where the girl gets, of course, you know, touched by something that she shouldn't, and she runs into the decontamination thing, and Luciano Pagazzi makes sure she decontaminates in her white t-shirt. So it's like a white t-shirt contest moment in this Alien from the Abyss movie. Nonsense, pure nonsense. But, you know, it's the late 80s. It's an Italian horror sci-fi movie. It's entertaining. It's ridiculous. The set was really cool. The hospital, like the jungle hospital, I really loved. The two-floor jungle hospital, I thought that was pretty gnarly. As far as the special features are concerned, from the Center of the Earth interview with Eduardo Margheriti, his son, A Outsider, the cinema of Antonio Margheriti, 61 minutes. Like I said, that's great. It covers his entire career, has interviews with him, interviews with actors that worked with him, interviews with, you know, contemporaries. It's great stuff. He mentions how he turned down Stanley Kubrick. He turned down Dino De Laurentiis to work on The King, the Kong movie from the 76, I believe. And Dino was like, "You're turning down an Oscar." And he's like, "I think I already did," you know, when Kubrick asked him to work with the sci-fi movies, because his sci-fi movies were really popular. And, you know, they were in the early 60s. So I had a lot of the stuff. I know the one was that the Leslie Nielsen Forbidden World was, or was it Forbidden Planet, was already out and stuff. And that was a 58, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, not completely ahead of the curve, but ahead a lot of the curve, you know. But not ahead of Planet of the Vampires, I think, which is 60-61 by Mario Bava. Son of the Outsider, interview with the Outsider director, Eduardo Margheriti, who directed, you know, of course, the documentary on here. But yeah, it looks good and sounds good. It's a fun movie. It's a goofy movie. It's exactly what you expect from a late 80s Italian horror sci-fi movie with Charles Napier in it, directed by Antonio Margheriti.
Dobby, get away from it! No, Mommy, don't shoot! Please!
Sobrevivimos de milagro.
Se entregaba en la película. Cuando hacía la película, se entregaba el señor.
Para mí hacía un cine muy interesante.
Su gran ilusión era el cine. Y él mismo lo decía, yo no me aburro nunca.
Es el paradigma del director de cine ideal. O sea, que todos soñamos con que nos dirija alguna vez.
Tú ves la película de miedo sin fondo musical y no te dice nada, ¿no?
Haven't you screwed things up enough already, huh?
We're dumping radioactive waste into the volcano. We're creating a bomb of enormous power.
Got more balls than both of you.
Kubrick vide il film e gli piacquero talmente tanto che lo chiamò.
Nemino piccolo piccolo in un mondo veramente tanto più grande di noi. E non convincersi che quando uno strilla azione sia giusto che...
Perché veramente ancora oggi, nonostante i vari Tarantino, le varie cose, su 100 persone a cui chiedi conosci, sai chi era Antonio Margheriti, secondo me 5 ti dicono sì.
Okay, the next one up is also from Severin Films, and this is Extraterrestrial Visitors, and this is by Juan Piquer Simon. If you guys don't know who that is, all I have to say is Pieces from 1982. He also directed Slugs from 87. He directed Endless Descent, a.k.a. The Riff, from, 1990? And he directed a movie I'll be talking about a little later in this episode. But the director, he's Spanish, of course, and he kind of has notorious, you know, pieces is notorious, and so is Slugs, just for being absolutely ridiculous and weird, but vastly entertaining and pretty good movies. I know people will be like, oh, I don't really like the hyperbole where people are like, it's the greatest movie ever made. It's like, I genuinely like most of these movies, and sometimes, I mean, a lot of people really do, but it's hard to tell. You know, it's hard to tell how sarcasm, you know, begins and admiration, you know, and whatever, where admiration ends and sarcasm as it begins. It's whatever. But I truly love Pieces. I really like Slugs. And, you know, Endless Descent has its place as well. So, and this director, say what you want, although he is very ambitious. So this one clearly, made in 83, is a cash-in on Steven Spielberg's 1982 movie E.T., Extraterrestrial. So what we have here is the weirdest fucking thing in a long time. I mean, only the Italians could make a ripoff of E.T. and make it like a straight-up horror movie, but they do, and make it silly and family-friendly at the same time. Don't ask how it feels like an R-rated horror movie and then a goofy family movie at the same time. That's just the way it is. Tonal, maybe, it's not the Italians, jeez, it's the Spanish, jeez, making another mistake right there. At least you caught it, Dave. So I mean, here's where we go. Essentially what we have is there's a few hunters out there, poaching. They shouldn't be. And a group of kids going out to, you know, I one's rich and they're just driving. I don't remember why they're vacationing out there. There's also a family, uncle and aunt, and they have a small boy who's kind of like really into insects, really into animals, loves animals, has a sweetheart, very kind of weird and by himself a lot. So what happens is these hunters stumble on this alien and crash landed or something, and there's a bunch of eggs. And this one goofy hunter just starts smashing the eggs, like, violently, and I was just like, this is actually disturbing, and there's little, like, rotisserie chicken babies in there, whatever the fuck is going on. So obviously this upsets the alien, and one egg makes it, and this little boy finds it, he takes it home with him, and Trumpy is born. Yes, the alien is called Trumpy. The one point where the kid with red hair is looking at himself in the mirror saying something about Trumpy, and I was like, this is just waiting to be made into a meme about Donald Trump and whatnot, like Charles Dickens. He's talking to himself in a mirror when he visits the Ghost of Christmas Past. Somebody else do it. Nobody is going to get a reference to a Juan Picare Simon movie, whatever. But still, it's just a bizarre movie. So the kid is constantly talking to this puppet. Come on, Trumpy. It's absolutely ridiculous and weird. And there's this little guy in a suit walking around. And he, you know, there's this kitten that the kid is constantly touching. And it's like carrying with him. And I was just like, Jesus, this kitten is getting messed up. I was worried for the kitten's safety. Of course, you know, by crushing those eggs and basically, every time they see the alien, they attack. The alien, you know, has no choice but to attack the poachers. Then it attacks some of the kids, and it attacks the family. And we have almost basically a slasher movie in these kind of foggy, over-fogged woods, like a lot of Euro cinema would do. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it's super fog, and it starts picking people off. Sometimes it just knocks them over and whatnot. And it ends on kind of a sad note, you know? Trumpy, it's got to be a rendition of E.T. The movie is fine. The movie is ridiculous. The movie's shot pretty well for what it is. It's pretty entertaining. It's got its own soundtrack. It's got its own hit song in there. That's right. It's entertaining. It's goofy. It's not on the caliber of something like Pieces or Slugs or Endless Descent, but it's worth checking out if you're just curious of the nonsense that could be made. As far as the special features are concerned, we have Simon's Jigsaw Journey into the Universe of Juan Picare Simon, and this is an 141 minutes long. This is great. They talk about him starting off early in his career and how if it weren't really for him, maybe you wouldn't have people like Alex de la Iglesia from Spain, who's an excellent director. Like, he made Day of the Beast and Perdido Durango, also put out by Severin. So, and he also inspired people like Del Toro. And he was the only guy kind of making these in the 80s and the late 70s and early 80s, making these fantasy sci-fi horror movies. And, you know, that's admirable. And there's tons of people, his contemporaries in here, cinematographers, other people like that, actors and actresses that talk about him, which is the kind of people you want to see. But it also has talking heads that just aren't really, you know, directly related to him, but they are. And they're a little bit more important. They ran fanzines at the time and magazines and all this kind of stuff where they have some clout. It's a really good documentary. I learned a lot about him, and it made me want to watch a couple of the movies I hadn't seen by him. And like they say, you know, he may have been kind of somebody that was not necessarily, he was an opportunist. He wasn't an opportunist is what one guy says, but he would not turn away from opportunity or something like that. So he would obviously make E.T. or Slugs, all these kind of movies that could be, I wouldn't say misconstrued. Extraterrestrial is clearly an E.T. ripoff. You know, the riff was clearly on the Aquatic Horror kick. You know, in 89, we had like four of them with Lords of the Deep and Leviathan and Deep Star 6 and The Abyss. So this one was like the fifth one a year later. So you have all those movies, and he's kind of like, I don't want to compare him to Bruno Mattei either, you know, but like this movie is like something that if Bruno Mattei fans would love Extraterrestrial Visitors. I always want to say Extraterrestrials. Yeah, this movie's nonsense. As far as special features besides that, we have A Weekend in Hell, interview with actor Emilio Linder, composing The Cosmos, interview with soundtrack composer Lombardo Pastor, a private concert from Lombardo Pastor, alternate pod people opening credits, bonus disc, soundtrack in here, CD. So if you like this movie or if you like really weird, bizarre, like E.T. ripoffs, this is much better than Mac and Me, but what wouldn't be? Or Purple People Eater, if I remember correctly. It's been years. Yeah, so this is Extraterrestrial Visitors by Severin Films by Juan P. Kerr-Simon, 1983. So they struck when the iron was hot, right?
Woe be unto him who opens one of the seven gateways to hell, because through that gateway, evil will invade the world.
That'll live on, and no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago. In this little town, when the 14th comes round, there's a silence and fear in the air. Remember the morn that the legend was born, all the shock and the horror was there. For the legend, they say, on a Valentine's Day is a curse that'll live on. And no one will know as the years come and go a horror from long time ago. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago.
And the first one up, speaking of Juan Piquer Samón, is Mystery of Monster Island. That's right, and this is a Jules Verne story, or it's based on Jules Verne. Who knows how close it is? Probably not very close. And this stars two famous people that you would know. Peter Cushing, legendary Peter Cushing, and Terrence Stamp. Both great actors, both in here for a very short period of time in the beginning and the end of the movie, of course. So the young kid from Pieces is in this as well. And it's a period piece. And what happens is there's this island, and there's a bunch of gold, and some pirates have discovered it. And Paul Naschy, that's right, Paul Naschy, which is great because, you know, they say Juan Piquer Samón really respected Naschy, so it's really cool that he got to work with him, being one of the prolific pioneers of Spanish horror films, Naschy is. And he made a horror movie this year, too, Night of the Werewolf, which is much better than Mystery of Monster Island. So essentially what happens is Paul Naschy, trying to protect his gold from these pirates, blows up a bunch of them. One of them gets away and gets back to his ship, tells Terrence Stamp there's gold on this island, and he dies. The pirates want to buy the island, and it goes to auction. Peter Cushing is the richest man in America. He wants the island himself, so there's a bidding war. Cushing gets it. He sends his nephew there to check it out, sends him away from his girlfriend or his wife or whatever, and sends one of his colleagues, this older gentleman who's scared of everything, with them. They go to this island on the boat. And pretty soon on the boat at night, I thought it was going to be like a Dracula-style thing that happens because they go out and everybody seems to have their blood sucked. And I was like, oh, this reminds me of, you know, the voyage in Dracula, right? When the whole ship gets killed and they have the log, best part of the book, one of them. So I was like, this is pretty cool, pretty gothic. But instead of Draculas or vampires, we have these little creature from the Black, not little, big creature from the Black Lagoons come out that are in these terrible suits, these amphibious creatures, and they look hilariously bad. So these two panic. They get out of here. The guy's whining the whole time about monsters, the not nephew, and he's comic relief, obviously. This is adventure comedy horror in that order for sure, maybe comedy adventure horror. So essentially they end up on this island stranded, and they run against a bunch of monsters, including cave dwelling slugs, kind of dinosaur-esque creatures, muckmen of sorts, and of course the pirates come. And they want their gold. So they hold them hostage. They meet a couple people along the way that are trying to survive. They save somebody who's going to be sacrificed by a group of, you know, a tribe. And there's a little monkey, a chimpanzee, that helps them out. How cute. So the hijinks are very childlike, very silly, very goofy. And the monsters are very cheap and chintzy. But you know what? It has monsters. It's epic. It's ambitious. It's on location. It's an hour and 44 minutes long. This would be a perfect movie to pop in when you were home sick from school and watch and just be like, what am I watching? I don't care. I'm 12 years old. There's dinosaurs and creatures and I'm enjoying myself. You know what I mean? Now, it's not like something like you get yourself a real treat and you stay home and like Jason the Argonauts is on or something and watch some Ray Harryhausen or Clash of the Titans. You're watching like the B-rated version of Clash of the Titans or maybe Z-grade Clash of the Titans here. It does remind me a little bit of The Lost Continent from Hammer, where they like run amok and all those monsters, but that's better too. Even the effects are better in The Lost Continent, which Lost Continent's what, 68? So it's like 15 years before. I don't remember the year The Lost Continent came out. But anyways, this is fine. It's fine. The ending is such a cop-out, but who cares? I mean, this is a family movie. Mystery on Monster Island from Juan Piquer Samón. That's two in 1 week. Keep it up. I can't wait till I get to 82 when I can talk about Pieces. It's exactly what you think it is. You don't need to go to Texas for a chainsaw massacre. Okay, next up is a South Korean flick. That's right, and this is from Mondo Macabro, Suddenly in the Dark. Now, somebody asked if I had seen this one, and I thought I had. I actually had not seen Suddenly in the Dark. So, boom, here we go. This is a really good movie. It's more of a psychological horror movie, but it's definitely a horror film. So we have here is a husband and wife, and she's, what, 28 or something like that, and he's a little older, and he's a butterfly, he's a professor of biology, whatever he studies, but he's really into butterflies, so he'll go weeks on in and collects specimens of butterflies, and he gets a lot of rare ones and all these kind of things like that. So basically the wife is home, and she has a friend that talks to her here and there about a lot of stuff, and she sometimes plants these these seeds in her head, you know, maybe your husband's getting tired of you, maybe you're a little, all this kind of shit like that, right? Just, so this lady's a little insecure at times, and one day, when they have the other professors back, he's showing all his specimens, all these butterflies, and one picture is just that of some sort of ancient kind of strange doll. And, what is it, a topla, maybe you'd call it, or something along those lines. And everybody's like, what's that doing in here? And the wife's like, he's like, oh, I just was interested in it. They're very interesting and all this kind of stuff like that. I don't know how it got in there. Must have been an accident. So she's really kind of like, what the hell is that? And very, just like taken back by this doll almost immediately. And the husband kind of explains it away. Come to find out, then very shortly after, he invites this young girl whose house burned down and her parents died to live with them as a live-in maid. And she's younger. She's more attractive, apparently, according to this wife. So soon enough, this wife starts to develop these kind of weird, feelings of animosity towards her. And you don't really know what is paranoia and what is true. And this doll starts to play a factor in it because it's her doll. And then she puts two and two together. It was in the photos before my husband supposedly even knew her. She starts to get paranoid, and before long she's obsessed. She's obsessed with the doll. She's obsessed with this live-in maid. She starts to get aggressive towards her. The husband's confused, but hey, is he doing something wrong? We don't know. By the end of it, you know, it's called Suddenly in the Dark because the climax takes place when the electricity goes out and you're suddenly in the dark with all your paranoid thoughts and all your delusions and all your fear and all your regret and your resentment, all that kind of stuff's in there. But there is actually something attacking too. This is a good movie. It's well made. I like the psychological aspects. I like what happens to a certain character in a window. I was like, that's pretty insane. And how the husband reacts to the whole ordeal is pretty tense too. But this is a good movie. Suddenly in the Dark, by Mondo Macabro. It looks great and it sounds great. That's a plus too. A lot of good visuals, nudity, and stuff like that. And from South Korea, you gotta love it. There's another one from South Korea this year, of course, A Monstrous Corpse, the remake of Let Sleeping Corpses Lie. So we have an interview with producer David Soo, interview with critic Kim Bong-suk, and Korean cover Cavalcade, newly created the English subtitles. Yeah, this is a fun movie. I recommend checking out Suddenly in the Dark. It's good stuff. And it goes with the other movie that I'm going to talk about from 1981 perfectly. Okay, the next one from 1981 is Ulitid, or Wolf's Hour. And I believe this is based off a book. And I had not heard much about it. And I was like, oh, Wolf's Hour. I wonder, this is a Scandinavian flick. And I was like, I wonder if this is a werewolf film. Now, it's not a traditional werewolf film at all. Maybe in the vein of something like Wolfen, but more in the vein of a werewolf movie like Loki's from 1970. That Severn put out as well in the Woodlands Dark box set. But I watched it for 1970 before that. And it's a very subtle, very scientific period piece approach to possible werewolfism, but it would be something else, shape-shifting to animals. This is very similar. So what we have is a husband and wife. They kind of live in seclusion, and the wife, she's pregnant much along the way, and everything looks great, and one day she trips and falls down the stairs, and she loses the baby. This kind of sends her obviously into some depression and turmoil and everything like that. And she's a little distant. The husband's a little cold as well. He's an author and he writes stuff that he wants to write. And one day he gets a bizarre letter from somebody who writes him about wolves. And he's like, what the hell is this? And he's kind of intrigued. So somehow kind of cut through. And this lady is coming to live with them. She's bizarre and she's bringing her own wolf, and he's going to start studying it. And that's what he wants to write his book on, how wolves were mistreated. Before long, one wolf turns into a dozen. And pretty soon the wife starts to lose any kind of power in the relationship. The husband's going to do what he wants. And there's obviously some sexual tension between the wolf woman and the husband. And pretty soon the woman starts to get maybe a little delusional, maybe a little paranoid, very similar to Suddenly in the Dark. And she starts to think, I think that she's a werewolf. And she starts to mention, you know, never trust anyone whose eyebrow grows into one, which is a myth and stuff. They talk about that, and I think Company of Wolves and other things as well. But that's just kind of the old kind of classic, you know, mythology, I believe. And so what happens is she starts to get paranoid and everything like that, and stranger things happen. She chases her with the wolf. She's always out there with the wolves. Her bizarre behavior, cleaning in the kitchen too late, blood. So it's not like an all-out werewolf transformation gore fest. You're not going to get The Howling. You're not going to wear American Werewolf in London. You're not even going to get Wolfen. You're not going to get Night of the Werewolf. and Full Moon High, nothing like that. It's a different type of werewolf movie, but so many werewolves in 1981. You know, it is the year of the slasher, but it's also the year of the werewolf. So what happens is the paranoia starts to switch, and the husband starts to be kind of think of it as well. So it gets really weird, and the ending's brilliant. I love the ending. It's a perfect kind of subtle psychological horror movie, and I thought they were going to do something, and they didn't. Lokes does it, and I think Lokes makes itself a little bit better for it, but this one I don't think it needed it. It's just the idea of it happening was scary enough and weird enough, and it leaves, you know, obviously some question marks, leaves some things unanswered, which I think could be some value to some viewers. I think a lot of people do like that, and I do a lot of times, but maybe just a little bit more for me. I don't need everything, but I just want to know a little bit more, if that makes sense. I really thought there was going to be a really dark image of somebody washing up ashore in the river naked, and I was just gonna be like, that would have been such a good strong scene. But this is a great movie. This is a hidden gem of 1980. This is 81. This isn't your balls out gore or horror movie, really. It's a psychological horror film about a couple and the relationship with this wolf woman who may or may not be a werewolf or turn to a wolf at night and attack. But it's great stuff. It's called Wolf's Hour. Ulitid, check it out. Okay, the last one is a Patreon pick by Chris Carroll. And this is Kichiku, a.k.a. or just Kichiku Banquet of the Beast. And this is pretty gnarly stuff. This was put out by Arts Magic, which was a wild company. They put out a lot of the Hisayatsu Sato movies and some other stuff. So this movie from 1997 had a huge reputation of being a really twisted Japanese movie, kind of a violent, gory movie. And I think it kind of lived up to its reputation. I had never seen it. I had the DVD for years. So this movie runs about an hour and 46 minutes, which is kind of a long runtime for a kind of low-budget Japanese crime film horror movie. And I do think it is shot on film. I noticed some rips in the film and everything like that, full screen. So what we have here is an extreme leftist group that is being run by this guy who's behind bars. In the very beginning, one of his people in prison gets released. He's a new guy. He goes and meets up with the leftist leader's wife and the gang that is living there. And he's quiet, he's reserved, and we find out is somebody else kind of moved in, and he's kind of an asshole, he's loud, he's obnoxious, he doesn't act like this when the boss is there. He's been sleeping with the wife. Nobody likes this guy. Eventually, they kind of exile him from the gang, and what happens then is, you know, there's some younger people here too, and we learn a lot about their characters. A couple of them kind of seem to, almost one of them seems to be in love with the other one in that kind of way, and they're just kind of bizarre characters. The wife is completely bonkers. As the movie progresses, she gets worse and worse and more violent. She has a very insatiable sexual appetite, so she's sleeping around with a lot of the guys on purpose, she's using them and whatnot. So all this stuff is coming to a head, right? And one day the leftist leader, he commits suicide, and that turns everything into turmoil, right? Somebody rats on part of the gang, somebody is blamed, and murders and chaos ensue. And the whole last act of the movie takes place in the woods. If anybody's seen this, there's an infamous scene in the movie where somebody's head gets blown off with a shotgun. If anybody's ever seen the GIF or the picture or the video of the head getting blown off by the shotgun in the woods, the Japanese film, this is it. This is the one where it's sitting down. It's completely gory. There's another show-stopping scene in this movie. And the Japanese were always good when it comes to gore, having these show-stopping scenes. That one, in the of course, with the shotgun here. And there's another scene with the shotgun. But before long, they start to kill each other. And these underlining rage or hatred or maybe mercy killings start to come out. And it's violent. It's crazy. It's weird. It's bizarre. And I think it works. I think it boils over perfectly. And I remember in the beginning they show like footage that is nice and sweet, and eventually it turns to something brutal and, you know, people being manipulated. But this is a good film. It's a weird film. It's very Japanese. It's very violent. And it's very much a product of its time. You know, in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, even what, from the mid 80s to like the early 2000s, we had a lot of like direct-to-video kind of violent movies. Now this, I know the director did other work. A lot of the actors didn't work in too much after this. But this is an interesting film. I'm glad I watched it. Kichiku, Banquet of the Beast, unflinchingly graphic, extremely violent. Tom Mez, Midnight Eye. Tom Mez does a lot of stuff. Tom Mez has, what podcast is Tom Mez on? Isn't he on the Twilight Zone podcast? And he was on another one. He's got a wonderful voice, if that's the same Tom Mez. I don't know. He's been doing this long. So anyways, this is a special edition with two discs, and this disc one has the film, but disc 2 has Introduction by Tom Mez, acclaimed writer on Japanese cinema. Then we have The Making of Kichiku, Reaction to Kichiku, original interviews with director Kuma Kiri, cameraman Hashimoto, the four lead actors, Zanin, Sawada, Bokuda, and Ogiso. Hopefully that was decent. So yeah, it has a decent amount of features. And I love when the old cases, you can feel the weight to these things. Anyways, good movie, violent movie. If it sounds like it's up your alley, check it out. I enjoyed it. Okay, questions, comments, concerns, all that jazz. Dada the Baser, really enjoyed Unwelcome. Me too. DVDs, Nuts, and Popcorn. Freddie Mercury, I can't believe you are still alive. What the fuck? I faked it all just because I wanted to chill and watch movies and review them. And you guys never recognized me until I grew the mustache back. Kentuckinator, Saturday the 14th is the shits. Saturday the 14th Strikes Back is somehow worse, but better. Okay. Subjective Perspective Collective. Hey, Dave, good stuff as always. I recently got The Pit and the Pendulum as well. Been on a Barbara Steele and Vincent Price kick lately. Plan to own all Price's films, 211, believe. Excited to meet Barbara at Texas Frightmare, May 28th, 26th to 28th. Awesome. Hopefully I didn't cut you off there, but yeah. I bet she's cool. Ontologically, Steve, with that mustache, you look like you teleported straight out of the 1970s. Plitzia Tetsi, I just may have to bust out my mustache. You got me envious. Can always cut it off. It always will grow back. Nick Mua, The Pit and the Pendulum is a classic, isn't it? Vincent Price and Barbara Steele in the same movie. How could you dislike that? Love the positive ghost story review, especially since you're not too fond of ghost movies, right? Well, I like classic ghost stories, like Changeling, Ghost Story. I just don't like that time frame, early 2000s ghost. It's not my thing. Questions. What's your favorite of the Corman Poe movies? That's tough. Mask of Death. Mask of Red Death is great. Pit and the Pendulum is good. I don't really know. They're all good. Now, Haunted Palace is more Lovecraft than Poe. Do you think Mr. Corman should have made more Lovecraftian horror? Yeah, the Haunted Palace is named after a Poe story, but the story itself is a Lovecraft story, and they throw that Poe poem at the very end. But like, whatever. It would have been great, but I don't think the Haunted Palace sold as well as the other Corman stuff. I mean, is AIP... I know the Dunwich Horror. Who produced that? Was that just AIP? Did that involve Corman at all? I can't remember. And that's a Poe one. Die, Monster, Die. Those are both AIP. Those are Lovecraftian ones, so... Are drive-ins still a thing in the US of A? They never really caught on over here. Yes, it depends. You know, it depends where you're at. You can only have drive-ins if it's warm weather. You can't have drive-ins in shit weather. So they are still a thing sometimes. I mean, they're not as prolific as they used to be. Keep on rocking that stash, sir. Fetish Magic, this thumbnail. That's funny. Tom Brunner, enjoyed the show as usual. I particularly like the Pit and the Pendulum review. I've collected movies since I was 8 years old, and that's one of the first movies I ever owned. Of course, not the pre-videotape days of the 70s. Owning a movie usually meant one of these Super 8 reels. If not familiar, they were silent 10 or so minute highlights of the feature films that you ran through a home movie projector. My mom used to buy them for me at Kmart. I'd have neighborhood kids over for monster movie marathons in my basement. Really kickstarted my lifelong love of film. That's a great story. I've heard about those before. But you know what, guys? No update. Now, I did order some stuff finally. I finally bought some stuff on my breaks and get some overtime. So looks like I have some money. Looks like some updates should be coming. Plus, Vinegar Syndrome is coming at the end of this month. There's going to be some stuff. And then Sever's doing that thing at the end of this month. It never ends. Never fucking ends. My breaks are fixed, though. So anyways, yeah, you guys, let's get out of here. All right, guys. Thank you very much for watching. And as always, have a good one. Me.